hear people talking bad about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on wars we fight and griping about the way things ought to be. Tonight I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down with life, I'm fighting and talking down to me. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man. You're walking on the fighting side of me. Just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down with life, if you don't love it, leave it. Let the song I'm singing be a warning. You run down my country, man. You're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down with life, I'm fighting and falling down key. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be warned. When you're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me.
When you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me, and that's the name of this program. Here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com, well, lots more news and views for our people. Of course, those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia, New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of you who may be listening this morning in the European heartland. Well, I was given a subscription to the Anglican Journal, and that's the monthly publication of the Anglican Church of Canada. It is quite a leftist publication. Now, I'm not an Anglican, never have been, but a good supporter of mine decided to give me this subscription some years ago. So I read it and like to keep up on what's happening. And a front page story based on some extensive research by an Anglican priest who's also a statistician. It's on this front page. It says, "Gone by 2040. Statistics report a wake-up call to church," says the primate, that's the head of the church. "Recently released data suggesting the church's rate of decline has not slowed over the past decade and a half. While not surprising, should serve as a useful reality check for Canadian Anglicans," says Archbishop Linda Nichols, a female bishop, primate of the Anglican Church of Canada. Quote, "I don't think they're a surprise to anybody," Nichols said, of the statistics in an interview. Anybody who's been in the church, in the pews, or as a priest, or as a deacon, or a bishop has known that this decline has been happening. We see it every Sunday. We see it in lots of ways. I think it's a wake-up call. If people are not coming to the church and finding a place of hope and good news, then we have to ask, how are we presenting that hope and good news, and you know, what can we do to improve things? There's a good deal more in the report, which points out that while 60 years ago, Anglicans made up about 7% of Canadians. Today, they represent considerably, about maybe 3/4 of 1%. In 1961, there were 1,358,000 Anglicans. This had declined by 2001, so that would be in 40 years to 641,000. So it had declined by 50%. And by 2017, that had declined 2/3 more. Well, let's say a little more than a half. There are 282,412 Anglicans, at least there were. And when you see much of the rest of what's in the paper, you begin to understand why the Anglican Church is quite left-wing. Is a social gospel church. It has spent a tremendous amount of time moaning and groaning the past 10 years about how they mistreated the native people and so on. And here's a whole full-page article in the same paper. Task Force recommends new model for refugee ministry. And it's all about how the Ottawa Diocese of the Anglican Church has co-sponsored or brought in 242 refugees from countries all over the globe to Canada. The largest number of any sponsorship agreement holder in the country. That's in the last year. And there's a picture of a bright young Anglican priest, Reverend Aaron Thorpe, with members of a family who were sponsored by Trinity Anglican Church in Ottawa. And there is a woman in a hijab. My strong guess is that these people are Muslims. I know you're supposed to reach out to other peoples, but you know, we have desperate needs in Canada. This, of course, turns on a small number of people, but the Reverend Mark Whittall, who serves as the chair, I guess they mean chairman, I don't think he's actually a piece of furniture, of a refugee ministry development task force that has recommended a new model for offering the ministry, began his presentation to the diocesan synod in October with a photo of a young refugee family who had recently arrived in Canada, happy and grateful to be reunited after years of separation. And it goes on about this. Well, I kind of have to ask myself, what does this have to do particularly with Christian belief? Yeah, I know, reaching out to the homeless, but it seems or at least the refugees, but it seems the more bizarre they are, the more likely the Anglican Church is to embrace them. They say that they're not attracting young people, and they're, on the other hand, the older people that remain the bulk of their congregation are, needless to say, and there's nothing particularly earth-shattering about this, getting older, as you might expect. So what's the future of the church? Well, with the present trend down from 1.3 million, give or take, in 1961 to 600-some-odd thousand 19 years ago to 240,000, you know, rounded off today, by 2040 there won't be any more Anglicans. The old ones will have all died off, and presumably there are just not that many young ones coming along. And they're kind of scratching their head and, well, what should we do, and so on. Well, but there are churches that are gaining people. Strict Bible believing churches among Protestants. Conservative Catholic churches. You see, what would attract a young person to a church for the social gospel? Well, not much. I mean, there are all sorts of left-wing groups that will do the same thing. So there really wouldn't be any particular reason to join a church. And you don't join a church normally to pursue social gospel types of things. I'll tell you why. The church should not be a political arm. The church is in a position to answer certain questions that, let's say, a politician cannot answer. And these are the very fundamental questions of who is God? Or more fundamentally, is there a God? Okay, and if there's a God, then who is he? You know, like, tell me about it. Now, this is something that a political movement, a political party cannot really do. The special expertise of a church, is God. Who is God? What does God want of us? Do I have a soul or some sort of immortality or something that will live on beyond the physical body? And if so, how do I approach the hereafter? Now, those are not questions a political party can answer. They aren't questions that are unique to the church. But instead, so far too many Christian churches today simply preach, essentially, a socialist gospel. You know, the usual stuff of guilt. You know, we're all guilty. And not necessarily guilty of sinning in the old traditional Christian sense of the word, but we're guilty of raping the environment, abusing the native people, being unkind to the third world, and so on. Now the unique thing about that is that you don't have to go to church to hear all that. There are plenty of leftist cultural Marxist groups that'll tell you the same thing. So what would be the particular attraction of church? Of these churches, well, the fact is that there wouldn't be, it's not, there isn't any, and that's the good deal of the reason for the decline. Now, in the same issue, there were two letters written about Don Cherry. Now, Don Cherry was a Canadian icon, hockey icon. He'd been a coach for 5 years with the Boston Bruins, about 35 years ago, and for 37 years, he had been the host of Coach's Corner on Hockey Night in Canada, which at one point had been CBC, Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, show every Saturday night during the hockey season, and is now being carried by Rogers Cable, but the fact is, he was immensely popular. He's a curmudgeon, a gruff, rough coach, a former coach who likes hockey in the old style. He thinks some of the reforms or the changes are rather namby-pamby, he was basically paid for his provocative commentary. I mean, that's who Don Cherry was. Well, anyway, along came back just before Remembrance Day in November, Don Cherry, during his Coach's Corner commentary in the between the first and second period of a game, made the comment that sales of poppies, then that's for the November 11th Remembrance Day, were in decline. And a friend of his who sold the poppies said this would probably be the last year because, people just are not buying it anymore. And he went on to say that that he's the urging people to buy the pop. He's been a big supporter of veterans. And he said, you people who come to this country for our freedom and liberty and standard of living and all that, you owe that to the veterans. So spend a few bucks and buy a poppy. Well, you people completely set off the politically correct. There was an absolute firestorm of, he's anti-immigrant. He wasn't anti-immigrant. He was telling immigrants and others, get with the program and buy a poppy. I've covered this before, but it led to within 48 hours of his being fired. And even as bad as that is, more disgracefully, the Legion disavowed him, the people he'd be raising money for. The National Hockey League said, we stand for diversity and so on. So they split with him. And of course, his employer did as well. It was a disgrace. Well, anyway, along with other things, Don Cherry is an Anglican wingman and proud of it. Well, here are two letters from the January issue of the Anglican Journal, the monthly newspaper of the Anglican Church. Cherry picking God's advice. In December 2013 edition of the Anglican Journal, that's 7 years ago, a front page profile entitled The Irreverent Reverend Don Cherry prompted me to write a letter to the editor, which was subsequently published few months later. In it, I decried the paper's decision to give credence to a man who regularly offends multiple groups of our population and is given a pass because he attends a parish in Mississauga and can, among other things, recite passages from the Book of Common Prayer. In the article, Cherry says he turns to God for all important decisions. I shook my head at some of the advice God has given him. Now, 6 years from that article was published, years during which Cherry continued to glibly besmirch numerous individuals and groups to which viewers, Anglicans included, shrugged their collective shoulders and said, that's just grapes, get over it. That was his nickname. He's finally being called out and his platform ripped from under him. I, for one, look forward to enjoying hockey night in Canada without this shock jock raising my blood pressure. Judith Butler, Toronto. Now, I don't mean to preach, but doesn't Christianity say that we have compassion for the sinner? And that's, of course, making the big presumption that Don Cherry is a sinner. But isn't that what we're supposed to do? We're supposed to acknowledge that we're all sinners and not judge each other? No. This preachy woman waving her finger and she says, she's glad he lost his part. She's glad he lost his job. The meanness of that. Where's the Christian charity? Anyway, she complains that he criticized and numerous groups and offended some people. Well, yeah, he's a critic. He's a commentator. He's paid to be controversial. He's a character. Now, you would have thought that the fact that he's a churchgoer that he prays might have counted for something, but no. Another letter to the editor. As a role model, Cherry is the pits. Now, this is 7 years after the article, the original article appeared. And this is from a John Whitmore. Some time ago, there was a fawning appreciation of Don Cherry as an Anglican published in the journal. He never was a good role model in his starch collar and off-putting manner, but the last round's enough. Could I request that he no longer be held up as a moral example? In his public persona, he goes against everything the church claims to value. Does he? Really? He was only telling immigrants, and basically, if you listen to the entire broadcast, or telling everybody, get with the agenda, help the veterans. These two people, as much as anything, I think help answer the question, why is the church declining? Because it doesn't represent, it doesn't seem to answer some of those basic questions about human existence. It really just seems the priggish, politically correct a prayer. Well, frankly, many people will say, who needs it? Just last night, I reflected on efforts by a Jewish group to get a game removed from certain stores in from stores that sold the game in Quebec, and they were successful. And I suggested that, you know, this endless pushiness to force their agenda on people, to tell people what they can read or what they can play or what it really grates and should be resisted. Just the very next day, another outreach. This is from the National Post. Jewish group wants Park Street renamed. You know, as little Greta Thunberg says, and I don't like her at all, but how dare you? Well, yeah, how dare you? A man who sought to prevent Jewish people from ever buying his land should lose the honor of having a street and park named after him, a Jewish advocacy group said Tuesday. In a public call to the city of Saint-Jean-sur-Richelieu, roughly 30 miles south of Montreal, on a small residential island in the Richelieu River, is Wagner Street. It's like Wagner but with an E, Wagner Street. At the end of that road is Wagner Park. Both are named after Alphonse Wagner, who tried in the 1960s to prevent Jews from ever acquiring the titles to the land he owned on that island. Now, these type of exclusionist codicils used to be legal. Now, they became illegal through court rulings some decades ago. But it was not unusual for people not to want their land to go outside of their community, or more specifically, in many cases, to Jews. Now, that was the man. That was his view. That's what he wanted. And he attached such a codicil to the deed. It was recently revealed in the Quebec Superior Court that Wagner had registered a real estate a covenant decades ago, stating that the purchaser and his representatives of the land may not dispose of or rent the said lot to persons of the Jewish race. A judge revoked those conditions in November after they were brought to the court's attention by a notary. Montreal's La Presse first reported the story on Tuesday. Well, immediately, this is Wednesday night, actually. David Ouellette, with the Center for Israel and Jewish Affairs, said his organization read what Wagner's 99-year-old son had told the news organization. At that point, Sija had to speak out. The La Presse article quoted Louis Wagner, that's the son of the original Alphonse, who's 99. He quoted Louis Wagner, who said, quote, "My father got along with everyone, but you see, the Jews, they become owners of a little bit everywhere. That's what he didn't like. He had Jewish friends. He just didn't want them to be any trouble with the Canadians." It's not a very, I must say, not a very coherent explanation. But, you know, after all, the poor old guy is, what is he? He's 99. Well, that said that he and the rest of his colleagues at CEJA, that's the Center for Israel and Jewish Affairs, were dumbfounded by Louis Wagner's words, which they felt tried to justify the covenant by saying that the Jews take over everything. I'm not sure that's exactly what he was saying, but you see, you have to imagine it's a little island, so he basically, I guess, didn't want people who were not French Canadian to be there. It makes sense. Cedar is now calling on the city to do the right thing and commit to renaming the street and the park bearing Wegener's name. Saint-Jean-sur-Richelieu mayor Alain Laplante said the city will study and seriously review the suggestion. In an interview, Laplante, who's the mayor, said it was common in generations past for streets and parks in his city to be named after the owners of adjacent land. Not necessarily as a celebration of the owner's value. So I guess on this small island, the adjacent land, which part of which became a park, and the street, it was all property owned by Mr. Wegener. So it was not unusual that the street would be named after him. So the city's studying the proposal. This effort by the Jewish lobby groups is to smash down any person who's ever had a negative feeling about Jews, I believe is something that will come back to haunt them. I don't think you can constantly push people around as they have done, and eventually people just don't like it. Here is a very interesting report. Yesterday was the big debate, the last debate before the Iowa primary, or the Iowa caucuses, but for the Democratic Party. And there was a lot of to and fro among, I think it's the remaining seven candidates. Well, here's something very interesting about one of the leading candidates, not the leader, but he certainly has a significant amount of support. This is Bernie Sanders. Project Veritas reveals Bernie Sanders' campaign organizers are violent communists. Who would have guessed that the people who work for Bernie Sanders are actually communists? Or at least some of the key ones, not all, of course. James O'Keefe of Project Veritas just blew the lid on the whole operation with his latest secret video drop. I'm going to...
Like, free speech has repercussions.
So what, Trump gets really back to what?
Cities burn. And the only thing that fascists understand is violence. So the only way that you can confront them is with violence.
The directive from Bernie that we can't attack Warren.
I think it's also fair to point out that when we were in Moscow, for example, people here also were extremely impressed by their public transportation system.
Meet Kyle Jurek, a field organizer in Iowa for presidential candidate Bernie Sanders. Jurek says cities are going to burn if Trump gets reelected. These are worrisome words from someone who works for a man running to be president of the United States. Now, the evidence shows Kyle Jurek has been in politics since 2018. When, according to these FEC records, Jurek was paid $500 while working for the Democratic Senate Campaign Committee. The FEC records also show he has worked for the Sanders campaign for over 6 months. And so far, Jurek has earned nearly $11,000.
Yeah, they seem emboldened. They have been emboldened by Trump, all that rhetoric. But they are scared and senseless of anti-fascists. Like even the ones that are kind of like, you know, the right wing people. The only thing that works, the only thing that fascists understand is violence. So the only way that you can confront them is with violence.
So if Trump gets reelected, what?
City burn.
What does that do?
Yeah. I mean, we don't have a lot of time left. We have save like human civilization. And obviously Trump, you don't give a about making sure that the world doesn't burn.
happy to be in Milwaukee for the DNC convention.
What am I going to say? Well, I plan on being there. What about Des Moines?
We're going to make 1978 look like a f***ing Girl Scout f***ing cookout.
What does that mean?
Remember what happened when McGovern got f***ed in Chicago in 1978?
Riots. F***ing people getting beaten by the cops.
The cops are going to be the ones that are getting f***ing beaten in Milwaukee. You're going to call up the National Guard for that shit.
Jurek is clearly very radical, but also very confused about his political history. He talks about riots in Chicago in 1978 when George McGovern was running for president. In fact, the riots were in 1968 when Hubert Humphrey was the Democratic nominee. McGovern ran for president in 1972, and there were no riots that year.
Like, if Bernie doesn't, if they take Bernie from us, we have nothing else left to lose.
Put it all in boxes, whatever it takes. And that's why, they're like, oh, and the infections are violent. It's because we're willing to go above and beyond what the law says is acceptable. Like, oh, free speech, yeah. Like, they try to be like, you know, oh, you're a victim, you're against free speech. No, we're not against free speech. We're against f***ing hate speech. And if your free speech is something that, like, these people shouldn't exist, then I don't give a f*** if it's free speech or not. You don't need to, like, free speech has repercussions.
Yeah,
there are consequences to your f***ing, right? And if your speech is calling for the elimination of people based on race or gender or religious, for whatever reason, like, things that people can't change, then you should expect a f***ing violent reaction. And you deserve a violent reaction. Because, like, that's just not an acceptable thing. It's not acceptable.
So many people have suicided themselves that have been related to the Clintons in some way or another. It's f***ing insane.
Hillary Clinton?
Baby, revolution.
Hillary Clinton?
Revolution is on.
Let me tell you something about this revolution.
We don't gotta kill the Clintons. We'll make them kill themselves.
How's that?
Reign of terror.
It's clear in Jurek's idea of a revolution, Democratic candidates like Tom Steyer and Mike Bloomberg wouldn't be safe, and in his world, networks like MSNBC or even moderate liberals wouldn't be immune.
Hey, you know what I mean? I'm ready to throw down now. I don't want to have to wait for
who's going to throw down with?
Guys like that. What are we gonna do with them? Gulag.
Liberals get the fucking wall first.
What are we gonna do with those people that resist the change? Because that's a big deal.
Well, I'll tell you what. In Cuba, what do they do to reactionaries?
They shot him on the beach.
You want to fight against the revolution? You're going to die for it, motherfucker.
Jurek also has some pretty harsh words for Sanders' rival on the left, Elizabeth Warren. He is particularly critical of her staffers in Iowa.
They're like sending canvassers to our events. Like, we had the climate summit with Naomi Klein and AOC. Warren campaign people show up, want to table the event, want to set up a table for Warren at the event. We're like, get the f*** out of here. This isn't a Warren event. You're not coming in here and scooping up people. Like, no. No.
It is a competition, you know?
Yeah, like, we're not on the same team, guys. Like, you know, like, I know you guys like to say, like, hey, Warren's just like Bernie, but a woman. But guess what? We're not on the same team. Yeah, I think.
Bernie's a bad judge of character. So, like, he has, like, Lieber, who is his, like, one of his, like, campaign, like senior advisors, is a shit fucking dude. He likes him. You know, Bernie likes him.
Bernie's, you know, he's 78 years old, and he's, like, set in his ways, and he, like, yeah. You know, that's one weakness that Bernie has, is he's a bad judge of character with some people. Like, he loves Elizabeth, like, he's friends with Elizabeth Warren. He's friends with
Bernie has, like, kind of started opening up lines of attack against Warren. But he keeps it policy based. People tell me that at on the doors. Like, yeah, you know, I like Bernie, but I really want a woman to be. It's like, wait, so like you're okay with a woman if she has worse policies? Like, just because she's a woman, because she has a vagina, that's why you're gonna vote for her. Like, if we could beat Donald Trump, as long as we nominate a woman. Like, idiot. Like, what the?
They don't get it, man.
Like, the world is on fire. This is an emergency situation, and you're hung up on vaginas.
Is this someone you want to be part of your government? Keep in mind, Jurek was an open book. On day one, he told us he wanted to punch, quote, Nazis, burn cities down if Trump wins again in a free election, and spoke of shooting people, if they couldn't be, quote, re-educated. Is Kyle Jurek the true but hidden face of the Sanders campaign? Is the Sanders campaign going to fire Kyle Jurek? Are they going to say he's a lone wolf or an isolated incident? Well, in our next release, you will hear Jurek say some of the most shocking and disturbing totalitarian aspirations ever spoken during a presidential campaign. Stay tuned, America. More to come.
I think you'd find that truly shocking. I did. And these are people who are close to Bernie Sanders. Just to summarize, openly defending violence against people who exercise free speech that this person doesn't like. Supporting some form of re-education, claiming that America will burn if Trump is re-elected. If this were anybody else, if it were a conservative candidate, and he had somebody on staff with speaking those views, I imagine there'd be huge pressure for him to for that candidate to drop that person. I received a letter and a book from a good friend in the United States today, and along with that, he included some old clippings, which are always interesting. And so this is out of date, but let's just say that the situation has not gotten any better. It's from 2005. So these statistics are 15 years ago. The largest Muslim populations in Western Europe. Now, don't forget, this is 15 years ago. This is before Angela Merkel's million plus that came in 2015. The biggest Muslim population in Europe is in France. 8.2% of the population, and these figures are out of date. Today they would be considerably more. Germany, where 4.5% of their population is Muslim. Britain, where it's 2.2% or 1.6 million people. And in Britain, non-Christian portion of the population, 52% of the non-Christian people are Muslim, 18% are Hindu, 11% are Sikh, 9% are Jews, 5% are Buddhists, and assorted others, about 5%. In the Netherlands, 804,000 Muslims constitute 5% of the population. In Italy, 685,000 constitute 1.2%. In Spain, 427,000 constitute 1% of the population. And Sweden and Denmark, the numbers are woefully out of date. Sweden, 179,000, even back in 2005, constituted 2% of the population. In Denmark, 114,000 constitute 2.1% of the population. These numbers are shocking. And of course, I stress, they're very much out of date. They're 15 years old. the numbers have only gone in the other direction. This is an enabled invasion, enabled by our rascally political elites. Well, this is Paul Fromm. You're on the fighting side of me. I'm going to take my musical break now, and I'm going to continue something I've been playing for the last couple of nights. I think the music's great. Hope you think so too. These are German drinking songs, and this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me.
Thank you. Paul Crown, and you're on the Fighting Side of Me. Back with you again tomorrow, same time, midnight Eastern Time. The show is repeated at 8 in the morning, 4 in the afternoon. All of those are Eastern Standard Time. And I sign out tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf Forever. This is Paul Crown, and you're on the Fighting Side of Me.
In days of yore from Britain's shore, Wolfe the dauntless hero came and planted firm Britannia's flag on Canada's fair domain. Here may it wave our boast, our pride, and joined in love together. The thistle, shamrock, rose entwine, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. At Queenston Heights and Lundy's Lane, our brave fathers side by side for freedom, homes and loved ones dear, firmly stood and nobly died. And those dear rights which they maintained, we swear to yield them never. Our watchword evermore shall be the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever.